Given that I've never displayed much talent for anything, and I've never been particularly competitive, it came as something of a surprise to me, and a shock to many others, to learn that I'd made it into the Guinness Book of World Records, albeit anonymously. Much as I would like to be able to claim that this record involved a feat of solo endurance, such as crossing the Himalayas by pogo stick, or circumnavigating the globe in a bathtub fitted with a homemade sail, I cannot tell a lie. It wasn't a solo event, and there wasn't much effort required, at least not on my part. In fact, there were slightly over a million people involved, and most of the effort was expended by one person. And as with quite a few of the memorable moments in my life, it occurred in France. To celebrate the 14th of July, or Bastille Day of 1979, the city of Paris, always on the lookout for innovative cultural projects, invited Jean-Michel Jarre to perform in Place de la Concorde. If you're familiar with Paris, you will know this as the vast, normally traffic-filled space to the left of the Tuileries Gardens and the Louvre. At the time, Jean-Michel Jarre was riding on the crest of an enormous wave of popularity generated by his first two albums, Oxygène and Equinox. Collections of multi-layered electronic music, perfectly in tune with the zeitgeist of the late 70s. I was living in an international student hostel near the Boulevard Saint-Michel that summer. Many of us in the hostel, it transpired in the communal kitchen one evening in the week before the concert, had bought his albums back in our respective homes in Ireland, Italy, or the US. A good number of us, it also emerged after one or two glasses of wine, had spent many fruitless hours trying to pick out some of the catchier sections on pianos or guitars in our front rooms in Dublin, Padua, or Albany. Some of us, it further turned out after several more glasses of wine, harboured romantic feelings for Jean-Michel Jarre's then-wife, the actress Charlotte Rampling. There was universal agreement that her haunting eyes, her exquisite cheekbones, not to mention her acting talent, rendered her unspeakably desirable. When we discovered that the concert was free, courtesy of the enlightened city of Paris, the decision was made. We would all attend. Sure, we might bump into Charlotte Rampling. We clinked our glasses. Charlotte may well have been there. But as there were over a million other people there as well, she would have been hard to spot, even with those amazing cheekbones. The event set a record for the largest attendance at a concert anywhere in the world. Our group from the hostel found itself quite close to the giant tower of scaffolding that formed the stage near the gates of the Tuileries Gardens, and close enough to a mountainous bank of speakers to feel the bass notes thump insistently against our chests. To describe the concert as self-consciously theatrical would be an understatement. Jean-Michel Jarre had surrounded himself by a bewildering array of keyboards, computer terminals, and flashing monitors. He looked more like a crazed scientist in a James Bond film than a musician. Miles of crisscrossing cables, blinking lights, and a small army of sound engineers scurrying to adjust mysterious knobs all added to the impression that what we were seeing was infinitely more complex and significant than what went on at Mission Control in Houston during a moon landing. When, suddenly, about three quarters of the way through the evening, the sky exploded with fireworks, synchronized the music, the already excited crowd went hysterical. After the concert, as we made our way back through the packed Paris streets, opinion was divided. Some of us felt it was the best concert we'd ever seen. Others, of whom I was one, had reservations. I felt as though there was a phrase on the tip of my tongue to express what was wrong, but couldn't quite manage to get it out. Despite this, we all felt pumped with adrenaline, and none of us wanted to go back to the hostel. Where to next? It's a measure of how seriously the French take the idea of celebrating their national holiday that even after a public concert with a world record-breaking attendance, there were still plenty of other musical events around the city to choose from. Somebody suggested we go to a bal des pompiers, or fireman's ball. These dances have been a feature of Bastille Day celebrations for over 100 years. Fire stations in each neighbourhood of Paris open their doors to the public. Local musicians and singers perform. There's dancing and barbecues. We headed over to the fire station near Saint-Sulpice. The contrast with the high-tech extravaganza we had just seen could hardly have been more striking. On a makeshift stage, a frail-looking accordionist seated on a low stool was flanked by a guitarist and a keyboard player. A lady of indeterminate age, wearing a simple black dress, was sashaying across the stage, singing songs by Edith Piaf, in a voice that had probably once been quite good. Young couples swayed to the music. Small children danced with their parents. Handsome firemen in uniform danced with grannies. Each time the singer came to the chorus of her song, the whole crowd helped her out. The atmosphere could not have been described as electric, but it was uplifting. It was touching. The phrase I'd been searching for earlier in vain suddenly came to me. Sometimes less is more.